South Africans were ill-equipped for this financial crisis. I think that much is patently clear. The Investec Gibbs Savings Index has repeatedly shown us over the years that we just don't save enough. And COVID-19 illustrated that we'll need a foundation of savings for another very difficult rainy day in the future. And so much financial advice assumes that you have money, that you're just using it wrong and you're spending too much on clothes and not enough saving. But what are you supposed to do if you don't have enough money to begin with? Can a side hustle be the start of a new beginning or a supporting boost at the very least? Well, let's welcome our panel to discuss this. René Krobler, head of Investec Cash Investments, Nick Haralambos, the author of Side Hustle and Serial Entrepreneur, and Dr. Adrian Saville, professor of economics, finance and strategy at Gibbs. Welcome, guys. René, perhaps you can kick us off here. What has the Investec Gibbs Savings Index repeatedly shown us about the years, and what has become real and relevant now that COVID-19 has broken in a very real way and exposed this lack of savings in South Africa?
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here, and such a good opportunity to discuss what I think is a very important topic for South Africans. If we talk a little bit about the Investec Gibbs Savings Index, it's clear that over the last decade, our savings in the country has been dismal, to say the least. And why is it so important? Well, firstly, we need savings in the country in order to fuel economic growth. It's a bit of a virtuous cycle. If you have economic growth, you have income. If you have income, people are able to save, and you feed the virtuous cycle. Unfortunately, South Africa has been on a very different path. And what has been really, really telling is that the lack of savings has been very clear within particularly the household sector. And obviously, as we go into this global pandemic and the outlook for the economic growth in South Africa doesn't look very rosy, many people are asking, well, how on earth am I supposed to save? I don't even have enough money to make ends meet. And that is particularly why we would like to have this conversation today, to talk a little bit more about how we can look on the bright side of savings, even in the midst of this kind of a crisis that we find ourselves in.
And I think you touch on an important element, and that's when you talk about savings in this context of households struggling from month to month and living from hand to mouth, from paycheck to paycheck, and many households will then say, well, I just don't have enough to save at the end of the month. Adrian, what has the savings index revealed over the years that for you now becomes particularly relevant?
Michael, if we rewind 10 years back, the South African economy was running along with 3% economic growth. We were hosting the World Cup. And believe it or not, at that time, the rand was 7 rand to the dollar. So, you know, circumstances have changed spectacularly. But sadly, much of this was forecastable, because although we were benefiting from global buoyancy and supportive international conditions, our domestic practices and behaviors were such that it was almost inevitable that we would hit the economic wall. And that's been demonstrated consistently in the production of the Investec Gibbs Savings Index, showing that we were in the business of bad habits and bad behavior. And you know, in no way does this change people's personal circumstances, which have gone from, in some places, difficult to dire. And there is no way that we can walk past that and you know, suggest that, well, you know, now you need to change your behavior. It's done. You know, this is where we find ourselves. But there's many principles and lessons that we've been pointing to regularly in the publication of the Investec Gibbs Index, and one of them is that savings is a habit, and whether you save 1 cent, 10 cent, 10 rand, 100 rand, it is an established habit. The other thing that we've been at pains to point out in this ongoing work is that many people think that in order for me to save, I need to have an elevated income, or when my income rises, then I will start saving. Mm. But every single country that is rich today was at one stage poor, and their circumstances were in many ways similar to the conditions we find ourselves in now, whether it's Singapore, South Korea, Chile, Estonia. And perhaps a last comment, which we'll spend time fleshing out in our next publication of the index, is that crisis is the birthplace of invention and reinvention. And there's some fantastic work done on this type of, on this content by the likes of Garrett Diamond, who point out to the experiences of countries and circumstances as widely different as Estonia to Australia, and that it's this type of environment that sets us up for a brand new future. And if we put together then those principles, this canvas, and changed behaviors, I think we've got a new conversation that we can have.
Adrian, I think what it also demonstrates is an important behavioral element to savings, and that is habit forming. And it's such a behavioral economics issue. And we have countries that culturally just have a way to save and are natural savers, others probably not so much. Speaking at a country level, Renee, where do we find ourselves now in terms of the state of our savings as a nation?
Number for the Investigative Savings Index is 62.5. And just to put that in context, the pass mark would be 100. That's not 100% as we would know it. That's just for us to reach a decent amount of economic growth in the country. And the contributors, or the lack of contribution, actually comes from three role players, the government, corporate South Africa, and then obviously households themselves. And clearly at the moment, we can see, and even over the last decade, that households have barely been saving. That shouldn't come as a surprise if we think about the unemployment numbers in the country, the high levels of indebtedness. So we know that we find ourselves in a very difficult state at the moment as South Africans. And, you know, thinking about this, it's actually quite clear that if you think about savings, there are only two sides to this coin. It's your income and it's your expenditure. And Adrian has already highlighted the savings habits, which are on both sides of that coin. You know, putting away money when you get an income, and then also being very critical around your expenditure and making sure that you don't get into lifestyle debt. But one of the things that we can do is also look at our income and look at how we can supplement that income. And I think that is where, you know, the topic that we talk interesting, because people are often thinking about how to cut their expenses. But I think many of us in South Africa have already cut those expenses down to the bone. If you think about how expensive it is to live in this country, food, transport, just the basic necessities, there are many people that will tell you, I actually can't cut my expenses any further. And that's where this is an exciting conversation for me to say, well, if you can't do anything on that side of the coin, what can you do about supplementing your income? Many people are very, very worried about job security. You know, we know what states the South African business sector is in. I don't think anybody feels very secure about their jobs at the moment. And instead of feeling that sense of hopelessness, you know, I always try and look at the positive side and see what can you channel that energy into. And that is where the side hustle for me is such an interesting concept.
It's such an exciting time, Adrian, to be talking about this because of this accelerated digital transformation, which has given rise to a number of sort of micro or gig type opportunities to supplement that income. And understanding that there are many that have lost their jobs, there are many that have been retrenched, but there are also many that still remain employed. How should we be thinking about how we should look to replenish or at least add on to supplement our current income?
Michael, I think that you know, one of the attributes, Nick is the expert on this, but you know, in my experience, one of the attributes of a side hustle is it doesn't replace your existing work. And very often, it's never intended to replace your work. So it exists as a complement, and even if it's a modest complement, it can be that small margin that becomes the source of saving. And the critical ingredients to saving is A, it's a habit. We, you know, hopefully we've made that point. B, you need to get it in as a habit as early as possible. so that you can give saving its most valuable component, which is time, and that's where the compounding comes from. But in thinking about, you know, what can I build or where can I go from here, perhaps it shouldn't be lost in this conversation that the investment firm that I run started its life as a side hustle. And that business has grown. I mean, we need to be very careful with the word hustle and investment in the same sentence, but hopefully my point is well made. But, you know, it didn't start as I'm going to build an investment firm and here I go. It actually started as me helping out a couple of people who had investment problems. And today I have an individual and institutional investment firm. That much wasn't planned. Perhaps, you know, Nick will also, you know, can speak with deeper experience about this, that, you know, to start today and say, well, I plan to build an empire is not really, you know, the ethos of hustle. Empires have been built. Jack Ma's Alibaba started as a side hustle. Apple started as a side hustle. And the examples are prolific. One of my favorite recent examples is Julie Dean, who built the Cambridge Satchel Company with £600, stitching together satchels on her dining room table with her mom. And that turns into a £100 million business, which has recently attracted a Hong Kong private equity partner. So it grows arms and legs. The ambition or the intention of the hustle is I've got a skill, I've got a capability, and I've got a need. And where those converge, we're into the business of side hustle.
And that is the sweet spot. Nick, how do you define a side hustle from your experience? And you've recently written a book on the topic. Adrian's already covered a lot of ground there. But what would you say is key to establishing a side hustle?
I'd say at this point that if Adrian didn't have his own side hustle that had become a full-time job, I'd like to work with him because he's nailed everything that he needed to. It's like he has my handbook. But yeah, absolutely, he's correct. Side hustles, especially right now, shouldn't think big. You're not trying to boil the ocean. You're trying to achieve what I call success triggers. And that for me stems from the idea of just prioritizing your life. If you've got a career, make sure that that's your number one priority right now, because times are going to get tough before they get better. So your side hustle, in my definition, and I've discussed this with Renee too, is it's an additive to your existing income stream. I don't think that enough people, South Africa and globally, are considering a diversified income stream as a solution for long term. And in the world we live in, it has to be. In years gone by, careers would last 20 to 40 years. Now they're lasting 5 years at a job, or even in an industry. So people are less committed, they're more fidgety. So I would say that side hustles need to add to your existing income stream and be additive to your life. There's a lot to unpack here in terms of the stress we're all under. Side hustles, I like to say that your side hustle shouldn't be your side hassle, because it should be something that is additive. If it starts to subtract from your life, it deters you from having dinner with your kids or walking your dogs or being mentally or physically fit and healthy, then you've got a problem too, because the life we want to live isn't just about saving financially. It's Yep. also about saving our actual mental and physical well-being.
Nick, you touched on the point of stress and the mental game being key and strategic here as well. And habit forming, changing behavior is hard. What are some of the defeating or self-defeating factors that stop people starting a side hustle?
It's a great question. And I generally see three very distinct reasons that people prevent themselves from starting. And I actually use those words quite specifically. They prevent themselves from starting. The first is a fear of failure. The second is a fear of what other people will say. And the third is they don't believe they have enough capital, and that's financial capital. So quickly to go through those three, the first one, failure. I want South Africans to try and reframe failure as a learning experience, not the end of something, but the start of the next thing. And a little trick I use for that is if the thing you are going to start will actually not kill you, physically, literally kill you, you may as well give it a try. If it's not going to kill you, you have nothing to lose right now in the world that we live in. Everything is on its head. Who knows? Maybe your side hustle will become this amazing thing. The second thing is, what will people think? This one is a strange but true one. We need to forget about what negative people are saying about what we do, because the truth is they're more worried about their own savings, their own income, their own issues. They're not really worried about yours. And the third one is the one we're talking about today in more detail. What I like to tell people to start with is, if you don't have financial savings, at least up to 3 months of covering your expenses, you shouldn't be considering putting your money into a side hustle. You should be considering other ways to contribute to your side hustle. And that is, your time is capital. Your effort is capital. How much you do with this side hustle is capital too. You shouldn't be considering spending money you don't have to take the risk on a side hustle. That's for people like me who've got a really high risk profile, and I'm willing to bet the farm on every idea I have. That is not for the average South African.
Now, you mentioned that getting over your fear of failure is key. It's a critical component. I think we can't stress that enough in a naturally conservative society such as South African society. How did you, from your experience, Nick, get over that fear of failure? Because what can happen is someone can approach a new venture and say, I'm not afraid of failing at all. And then you fail the first time and you start to doubt yourself. And it's a lot easier to say, well, I just don't care. Then you get into it and you've got to reframe what the whole experience is about. How did you do that in your own business ventures?
It was an up and down journey, to be honest. I'm lucky that I started my first business at 16, so I've literally got 20 years of ups and downs and failures behind me. But in the beginning, it was really hard to get over, and I dealt with very real, very severe depression around failing. And actually, the most severe depression was after selling my first company against my will. I just couldn't believe I'd done that. So there is a lot to get over. But as I got older, I realized that these lessons that failure bring you make you better at trying the next time. And it's an interesting conservative thing about South Africa is, on the whole, on average, South Africans quit after trying the first business. Whereas in America and Europe, they quit after the third attempt. And that's a very big distinction, is we are so gun-shy of starting things because we're fearful of failure. But the truth is, there is nobody who cares about what you're doing. And that kind of helped me, that perspective that everyone's got their own failures to deal with. And the lessons that I gained from failure, when I'd gotten over them, the pain, and look back, it just made me a better business person. So I think that if your ego isn't at the forefront of what you're building, and you've set your success triggers, that's what you're aiming for, right? If your success triggers make 5,000 Rand a month, who cares what anyone else says? If you hit that trigger, you're living a better life. So that's the way that I've been looking at it.
And very often it is actually a small amount. It can be a marginal amount if you are living from month to month, that extra 5 or 10,000 Rand a month being tucked away very quickly. Adrian, as you will know, in the power of compounding, can make a significant impact or a change in a personal balance sheet. So how should we be thinking about that? Is it all about just going for those small targeted wins rather than saying, well, we want to transform something into an empire overnight? How do you go about doing that?
I think it's the same with investing as it is with business. You don't want to ever put down an investment position that if you get it wrong, it's going to break. It's going to break you or break your balance sheet. About diversification, and then as Nick points out, you know, some of the principles are really elementary. They're fundamental and they're not hard to establish, including the likes of getting as much time into the investment system as possible. That there is, believe it or not, in the world of investing, such a thing as a free lunch. It's called diversification. And as side hustle is diversification, it's changing your risk or improving your risk profile. And then investing is a habit. It's a behavior. Saving is a habit and a behavior. And I guess the point that Nick is making around managing our fears and anxieties is also squaring up to behavior. So somehow, you know, this all very elegantly marries together as a combination of this is not spectacular reinvention. You're not going to grandly change the world, but just modest shifts in behavior and practice can actually change your circumstances 180 degrees. Mm.
And in terms of the focus here, Nick, do you have a look inwards and say, well, this is a skill that I have that's transportable into another sector quite easy? Or do you say, well, this is a passion project of mine. I want to go and farm on the side and focus on what inspires you and get you out of bed every morning? There's probably no one-size-fits-all approach, but what do you tend to see work most often here?
I have polarizing views here, and I think for me it is a very binary thing. You shouldn't turn your passion into your work. You should be passionate about your work. The second you turn your passion into work, you're going to hate doing it, and then the thing that should be adding to your life is actually subtracting from your life. So what I like to help people do in the very old school way is get a pen and paper and write down skills that you have. Anything. If you play an instrument, if you're good with math, if you're an accountant, if you're a lawyer, you name it, and then try and find someone who will pay you for that skill. Once you've done that, you've kind of got the starts of a side hustle. It may be a product. You might know how to sew or knit or whatever it is. You can just start small and incrementally grow it over time, much like Adrian said he did with his own side hustle. The key tenets here are consistency and patience. You aren't going to turn the side hustle into a 100 million rand business overnight. It's going to take you months and months and years to get this to where you want it to be. So make it something you enjoy, make it something you're good at, and make it something you can get paid for.
I think the key here as well, keeping it a side hustle and giving yourself the freedom and the time to grow it without the pressures of quitting your job and pouring all of your energy into a new venture, most often is why we see these things turn into something successful and fruitful. That said, I think a lot of people would also say, well, if I don't have the budget to promote this new venture, how can I go out and actually pour resources into it? What have been the tactics that you've seen used by side hustlers to circumvent that issue?
Yeah, I think we kind of overplay this in our heads that we must have budget to promote this to the world. Meanwhile, all of us have been sending emails for decades. We've had Facebook for 10 years. We've got our own Instagram and Twitter, and we have word of mouth to promote this thing. So I like to use the old Glengarry, Glen Ross statement of ABC, always be closing. It's counter to hiding your idea from people. You should talk about it as often as you can in the most open way so that people know what you're doing, and if they find it interesting, we'll pay you for it. But you don't need budget to get going. You need consistently good product, you need consistently good service, and you need to actually tell people what you do without that fear of what they'll think, so that they then tell other people. If you're patient, it's not hard to build a side hustle into something meaningful that hits your success triggers. It's only when you start thinking this has to be a really big business really fast that you start thinking you need funding, when actually you just need to be patient and be consistent.
Patient capital. Adrian, you mentioned the Cambridge example earlier. Can you just share exactly how that side hustle turned into something that was transformative, certainly in that experience you were mentioning offline, that had something to do with school fees?
Yeah, so Julie Dean had two kids at school. She couldn't afford their fees. She needed some way to find additional income. And with her mom, they started stitching together these leather satchels, which they described as sort of very Hogwarts style, and was Oxford and Cambridge leather colors, and convinced her kids that these were the must-have accessory. And it was put together with £600 with the manufacturing bench, the workbench being her kitchen table. And I think that speaks to a lot of the things that Renee, Nick, and you we've been discussing offline. Is this isn't about inventing the world. It can be very modest. It can be entirely different to what you do, but it's got to be viable. And ideally, it's scalable. Also, perhaps to Nick's earlier point is, although, you know, I gave the throwaway statement that it's turned into $100 million sterling business with a Hong Kong investor, this isn't an overnight success. This is 13 years later.
Well, success is always, you know, that you never
overnight see. Success is a 10-year.
Yeah, exactly. Nick, It's a hard time for any business at the moment. And this almost seems, you know, we're talking about a side hustle, but we talk about a side hustle at a time when you and I always talk about the bloodbath in entrepreneurship and amongst SMEs out there. What advice can you give to those who are feeling fearful or just overwhelmed by this whole concept to even get started and to help stay motivated as well?
Yeah. I think the first thing is that you're not alone. And I think it's the nature of being an entrepreneur that you feel like you're in this venture alone and there's no one to help you. There is literally every human in the world that you're going right now. That's not to diminish what you're going through, but to know that there is a support system. The second thing is a lot of people are telling you to pivot. I'm telling you to not pivot too far away from the thing you're good at and the thing you know how to do. Stick in your lane, pivot slightly, don't completely try a different business. If you've only ever sold something in physical retail, starting an e-commerce store is going to take you 12 months just to learn the ins and outs. It's not a quick fix solution. So don't pivot too far away from what you're doing. And then the last advice that I have is quite brutal, but if you are considering retrenching, you need to cut quickly and you need to cut deeply. If you think you need to cut 5 people, you should probably be cutting 7. If you think you need to get rid of 3 stores, you should probably get rid of 5. This is a long-term event that we're in. It is not a quick another 100 days. We're looking at a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year trajectory of recovery. And that's how you need to start thinking as a small business owner and as someone building a side hustle. You're not rushing to the start line here. Just the beginning. You need to slowly build your side hustles and prepare your priorities for what's coming.
And hopefully you are then successful and your income starts rising, Renee. And what I tend to find happens so often is that your expenditure rises to match your income. And that's really the big issue we have here around our lack of savings, is that very often it's just not being able to recognize that you should be, rather than going out and buying that new car, 10,000 Rand every month, be putting the money away. What advice would you have for those as they start venturing out into a side hustle and they see that income start rising to ensure that this translates into proper savings behavior?
You've touched on a very interesting point, which is South Africans really love to live beyond their means. So one of the most important things to realize is that saving is just delayed gratification. And what I always tell people who ask advice in this realm is pay yourself first. So when you get income, whether it's from a salary or whether it is from a side hustle, make sure that that money doesn't hit your pocket. A debit order into some kind of a savings vehicle, you know, whether it's a diversified investment for the long term, is probably a good idea. And as you've heard, you know, both from Adrian and from Nick, I think we're in this for the long haul, and building your financial resilience now will stand you in good stead for the future. I do think that, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention, and now is a very, very good time to start looking at your financial situation, to start planning and looking forward and not get despondent. There's so much to be despondent about at the moment, but as you've heard, you know, from Nick, there are things that you can do with very little resource at your disposal right now. So, you know, my last piece of advice would be, do not be despondent. Take your future into your own hands and take that small step today that can make the big difference in your future.
I think an important message of hope to build some resilience in the future. Renee Krobler, Head of Investec Cash Investments, thanks so much for your time. Thanks to our other panelists too. Nick Haralambos, author of Side Hustle and Serial Entrepreneur, Failure and Then Getting Back Up and Winning Again. Dr. Adrian Saville, Professor of Economics, Finance and Strategy at Gibbs, with some great ideas on how to use this crisis to build some financial resilience.